Can you remember a year like the one we just had, both nationally and here in North Carolina on the political scene?
No, it's been really one of the wildest rides. And what's been interesting is, you know, how we try and interpret these results after the election, as the election results get closer and closer. And it turns out that the election was sort of a very normal election. The unpopular vice president of an unpopular president lost. That's what's supposed to happen. It was just a very close race where Trump won by a little, but won everywhere by a little, basically. And then all the upheaval that we saw, that's really the abnormal part. But the end result is as we should have expected.
What's kind of the postmortem on the presidential race for the Democratic Party as you start to, and I know we're a long way away, but as you look ahead toward what's next for that party, what's your postmortem for the Democrats?
One, a lot of the atmospherics were just against them. You know, where the voters were with the economy, it was going to be very difficult for Harris to win. So some of that, again, is normal, but they also have to learn how to better connect with people. And, you know, there was this whole debate of, well, maybe Kamala should have gone on Joe Rogan. Okay, and say what? You know, if you don't have the right things to say or you don't have anything to say, well, then maybe you don't need to go on those shows. And that's what they need, I think, to fix is how are they talking to voters? What are they talking about? Which is more important than where. And the other thing, and I know we may talk about the Tar Heels, is I had a Democrat who worked in the administration say to me on Saturday that they couldn't believe that Biden never went to the Army-Navy game. Obviously, Trump was there with John Thune and Speaker Johnson and others, and he'd been before. Those kinds of things, showing up at those venues, not that that then switches voters immediately, but it shows that you're a normal, regular person. And that's what voters really want to see quite often.
Let's talk about the president-elect who's set to take office next month. What do you expect to see from Donald Trump's second term in the White House?
Well, my first question is about the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's a narrow majority. We have a few Republican House members who are going to go into the administration. And just yesterday, Congresswoman Victoria Spartz, from the Republican from Indiana, has said she's not going to go on any committees, but is going to remain a Republican. There are a lot of wild cards there. And a lot of the conversation has been that it's going to be a tough year for Speaker Johnson. It tells me also that Donald Trump is going to have to pay a lot more attention to House Republicans because he can't afford to lose any. And with such a narrow majority, think of when Democrats had control of the Senate and Joe Manchin weighed a lot heavier than he otherwise would have. Republicans in the House potentially have that opportunity now. So Donald Trump's going to have to spend a lot more time working those members, on the phone with them, having them to the White House. And can he maintain that over a two-year period, or is it something he loses interest in or only sort of parachutes in or out of? That's a dynamic we haven't really seen.
What's the transition like right now for people in Trump's orbit as they get ready to assume office in about a month?
Well, one, they're drinking out of a fire hose right now, and that's normal. Clearly, there are some nominees who are having more trouble than others. They're spending a lot of time on the Hill, meeting with members who have real doubts. Those are Republican members, sometimes Democratic members. What we've seen historically is if a president's nominee goes to the Senate floor, they almost always win. And Trump knows that, and Trump knows that he has levers of influence that he can exert over Republican members. But it means that we're going to see in come post January 20, as we start having votes on some of these, and that's a long way between now and then, is some of them are in battles. Do they make it to the Senate floor or not? If they do, they probably win.
Let's talk about the Old North State here for a moment. A lot was made about the gubernatorial race between Josh Stein and Mark Robinson. A lot of national stories out there about Lieutenant Governor Robinson. Ultimately, was that what decided the governorship in North Carolina?
Most likely so. It turned off so many voters and also meant that it was harder for Robinson to talk about what he wanted to talk about. And so much of campaigns are, I want my opponents to talk about what I want them to talk about, and vice versa. But Robinson struggled to really be on offense because of all these stories that turned off voters and a lot of Republican voters. I know a lot of Republicans in the state, including a former House member, who just said there's no way they were going to vote for Robinson. And what we saw was that didn't necessarily mean that they all voted for Josh Stein, but a lot of them just sat that out. And that's why we had a double-digit lead or double-digit lead for a win for Stein. And we see that Robinson's troubles on that issue reemerged just yesterday, yeah. With the, you know, the username being used on a Zoom chat about disaster relief or some legislative issue.
Visit with Doug High, former communications director for the RNC. I'm curious your perspective. We talked a lot about this during the campaign, but how much did Mark Robinson and those stories that came out about the lieutenant governor impact the other Council of State races that were more down ballot in November?
Less than we thought.
Okay.
If we look at the AG race, Republicans have not elected an attorney general in North Carolina since 1896. So you can't pin that on Mark Robinson. And I had one statewide candidate who said to me the day after the Robinson stories came out, in a quote in a text, "I think I'm toast." I won't tell you who that was, but that person won. And so they won despite Mark Robinson. They didn't lose because of Mark Robinson. So look, it was, I think, very isolated towards Robinson. But if you skip a ballot, if you skip a race on a ballot, you might skip more. And so it could have had an impact, but it wasn't a deal killer to other candidates that they were very, very fearful of.
A couple of thoughts, and I'll let you go. I'm not sure how closely you're following what's going on in our General Assembly here, where the General Assembly passed and then did a veto override of Governor Cooper's veto of a bill that strips powers away from the incoming governor, attorney general, and other incoming Council of State members. Curious what you make of that back and forth here in North Carolina.
Yeah, and look, I don't love those moves, but welcome to politics.
Yeah.
And going from not having a supermajority to losing it means this was going to be a very busy December at the General Assembly. I don't think it should surprise anyone.
All right, now the most important thing we're going to talk about. What do you think about UNC hiring Bill Belichick?
Well, first, let me give you a story. Friday night, I'm in New York, and I'm walking down the street, and who comes walking up in my direction but Robert Kraft? And I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Kraft, I'm a Tar Heel. What do you think of our new coach?" And he smiled and said, "He'll be great. He's a natural-born teacher. You're going to love him." And the reason that, and it took me a long time to think about this, that I love this decision has very little to do with football. And I'm on the board of visitors at UNC. I talked to folks at the trustees and board of trustees and to the new chancellor with some frequency. And John Pryor, who I worked with in the Lock Faircloth campaign in 92, sums up a complacency attitude that the school usually has. He says, "We're great. We've always been great. We'll always be great." This hire shows that that kind of complacency is gone. And I think it's a bold move by Chancellor Lee Roberts. Again, I think it's about more than football. And that's why I love this. The school's looking to do a lot. And I've seen the school out-hustled so often, you know, nationally and internationally by Duke. This is going to be a lot about football, a lot about TV, and things like that, but it's also a much bigger picture item, and that's why I'm excited about it.
I think the Friends in the Desert have the over-under at 6.5 wins. I think over 6.5 for the Tar Heels next year.
Well, look, we've got to see, but you know, we've had that trouble before where we've either started out well and then ended up disappointed with 6 or 7 wins, or we end up with, you know, we could meet that over-under again, you know, with a bowl win,
sure,
at Fenway this year. It's not the season we want to have. And it's not, I don't think it's about year one for Belichick. It's about building that in a very real way. But it's going to be more national exposure, more national attention that isn't just about football.
Great stuff. Doug High, former communications director for the RNC. Doug, always appreciate the time. Look forward to visiting again sometime soon. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
You too. I'll be in Nashville and Winston-Salem over the next couple weeks. Can't wait.
You're looking forward to it.